There's a lot of things going on.
This is a very zany kind of game.
It was ahead of its time.
It's really clever what they've done.
It's tense, but it's very brain melty.
It's kind of a mix of everything I love in trick taking.
Welcome to Trick Talkers, your favorite podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Ryan.
And tonight's episode is brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
I've heard a rumor, Ryan, there's a trick-taking renaissance happening. Did you hear about it?
I have indeed. It's actually quite crazy the amount of big-time reviewers that are covering trick-taking games like Dice Tower, Space Biff, No Pun Included, and Shut Up and Sit Down.
Yeah, it seems to me there seems like a huge surge in popularity over the last few years. I think if we take a step back, do you think it was potentially the crew in 2019, Ryan, that started this craze?
I certainly think it has a huge influence on the public eye in the board gaming industry, seeing modern trick-taking games and what they can do. Because, of course, when the first crew back in 2019 came out, it exploded. And it allowed trick-taking to be seen by more people that normally just hear the word trick-taking, go, hearts, spades, euchre.
Yeah.
I remember playing those when I grew up as a kid. They weren't that much fun. So I think that's what started, again, like I said, the mainstream look of trick-taking, but I don't think it's what started this renaissance. I think that came closer from 2021.
Right. I mean, it's the irony, isn't it? The you can't talk in space, but then all of a sudden everybody's talking about the game about space. I digress. So 2021, if we're saying that that's the year you think potentially it started, and of course all of this is subjective, it's really hard to go back in time and say that was the definitive thing that started the Renaissance, as we're calling it here. But what came out in 2021? Was it The Crew 2?
The Crew 2, in fact, came out in 2021. Yeah, so that coming off of the first Crew and the success that that brought, and then going into 2022 is bringing many of these other games like Cat in the Box and Nine Lives and Ghost of Christmas that were all getting reprints or re-themes. And then not to mention Scout getting nominated for the Spiel des Jahres in 2022.
Right. I mean, at one point, I felt like I was part of this hidden underground community where I sort of, you know, maybe you felt the same, Ryan, had all these weird and wonderful Japanese titles. But of course, people would come around and say, well, what's that? We'd never heard of it because it just wasn't on the, you know, the latest hotness. It wasn't on the radar. Do you think that perhaps the sentiment now is changing where actually this is becoming normalized?
I would think so. I know it's a little harder because when we are so deep in it ourselves, when you're looking at your board gaming news, you're probably looking straight for trick-taking and shedding and climbing games. So the people you follow, whatever it might be, is directed more towards that.
Right.
But the fact that these other people, whether it's big-time reviewers or just your average gaming audience, there are more people that are talking about trick-taking games. I think a prime example is Sail, which is the reprint of Hamelin Cave that's coming from Allplay.
Yeah.
It reached the number one hotness on BGG, I think probably, what, a week or two ago now at this point?
Yeah, and that's a really funny one because obviously, BGG's algorithm is a weird, or certainly slightly obscure. And of course, I'm happy that it was number one on the BGG hotness. That's great news from a trick-taking community's perspective and for people who are discovering the genre as well. Fantastic. Because, of course, its predecessor, Hamelin Cave, that was difficult to get hold of. It was relatively unknown outside the, as far as I'm concerned, outside the trick-taking community. And obviously, you had to import it from Japan. And I'm glad I own it, but I think that speaks volumes that they're reproducing it as something like Sail and aiming it at the Western marketplace. It seems like the demand is there.
No, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that's showing just from AllPlay itself, which has been a huge contributor to starting all of these games coming to the English market. Like I already mentioned, Nine Lives and Ghosts of Christmas. Now, I can say that James Nathan, which for anybody who's in the trick-taking world has definitely heard his name some way or another, has a huge hand and involvement in that. There are a few other people as well. The Opinionated Gamers channel in general, which we're actually going to be talking about a little bit here momentarily. But James Nathan was a part of Board Game Tables, at least in the sense that he was scouting games for them. So he was really big into all, and still is, big into these Japanese trick-taking games, and was able to get Board Game Tables, which is what they were at the time, to make those games, Nine Lives and Ghosts of Christmas, and then continue on with Sail. So the start of it, whether it came from James Nathan doing that or not, I still think it would have come eventually. Because like we said, the crew,
yeah,
being as big as it was going to help push that in the first place as well. So I think at some point, this renaissance, as people are now calling it, for trick-taking was going to happen. It was really just a matter of when. A lot of these games that we've talked about on the podcast so far, or just ones that have been coming out in the past 5 years or so, are just really interesting. They're really good. They're really clever. They're finding new ways to change what modern trick-taking looks like. And it's allowed it to put it more on the map than it might have been before. Because, yeah, you could say going back to 1990s, early 2000s, there were still trick-taking games that were, you know, changing what modern trick-taking looked like. Because really before that, it was mostly traditional style ones.
Right.
Euchre, hearts, spades, etc. So it's really neat to see that transition of sort of a long spread of trick-taking games has now compressed themselves into that smaller, just these past few years, the amount we've seen.
The explosive launches of trick-taking games in a short period of time. You mentioned James Nathan. I often think of him as the Santa Claus of the trick-taking world because he just keeps finding these games and giving them to publishers to look at and get, you know, getting them in front of publishers and saying, hey, you know, have you seen this game? And of course, publishers are feeding into the popularity of trick takers now and realizing actually, you know, the profit potential or at least the desire for these games is actually out there. They're no longer these obscure things that you'd find in Japan. And I'm going to say in Germany, I know that was a very produced a lot of trick taking games historically in sort of the 90s and the early 2000s. You mentioned about the map. So let me ask you this then. If we don't know what caused the trick-taking renaissance exactly, because obviously that's there's so many contributing factors here, where do you think it originated from? I've mentioned Japan. I've said Germany. Obviously, there's some designers in the US, Ryan, and worldwide. Where do you think it came from originally in terms of, and we're talking about the Renaissance, not trick-taking in general, of course.
I mean, I don't think there really would be a specific answer, just because I think every country is making its own games that allow for this Renaissance to keep happening. Of course, yeah. Japan seems to be the place that has the most, because that just seems to be the ones that come out with the Tokyo Game Market that happens 2 to 3 times a year. There's always a lot of buzz that comes out around those. But absolutely, there's ones coming from Germany, from Korea, and even from the US that we're seeing continue, again, this pushing the boundary of modern trick-taking.
Yeah, I mean, to quote a song, it's big in Japan, right? You know, if we look at Japan in general, what I think is really allowed trick-taking to come to the forefront personally is that they allow a lot of these indie designers to come to the Tokyo trick-taking markets, as we mentioned, and they're sort of, the restraints are off, aren't they? They can sort of experiment as they like, bring these low-cost packages that they've put together, you know, even if it's a DIY job at home, and they've brought it to the market for the world to see. And they've somehow then made a transition from that indie, you know, little vibe to, you know, getting in front of publishers in the Western world who are then picking them up. And if I certainly looking at the UK, I feel potentially it certainly could have been harder for indie developers to get a look in compared to somewhere like Japan.
Certainly. And I think another part of it that comes together with that, you sort of mentioned here, small boxes is, I think, a big factor in that. There was that time when Kickstarter wasn't really a thing and you didn't really have a lot of game options to buy on there. But now it's like Kickstarter all the way, all the games. And there's a lot of that bloat.
Yeah.
There are a lot of games on Kickstarter that have minis out the butt and you've got $200, $300 all-in pledges to just get plastic for miles.
Not much to get any names, but we can think of a few. Yeah.
Yes. And I think we might have hit that point where people are ready to go back to smaller games and smaller price points because, of course, with inflation, prices of everything go up. And, of course, with the COVID and the shipping crisis and everything, with all of those increasing those prices even more at a even faster rate, I think that helped push this renaissance a little bit quicker than it might have happened. Because, like I said, the smaller boxes and smaller price points are a really enticing thing to show somebody. With Sale and Board Game Tables or Allplay, their whole thing with $19 games, those same small size boxes, it's really enticing. And I know with their newest one, not, I know we're obviously talking about Sale because it's trick taking, but the Chomp, Couture, and Mindspace that are included in there, all same size, all $19, get a bundle, and it's like a crazy stupid price off of whatever it is. And it just, it makes it a little bit easier of a pill to swallow than one game for $200 that takes up seven times the amount of space.
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Ryan. People becoming more conscious about what they're spending, VAT implications with that Brexit, European logistics overseas, the US, etc. So I think that plays a big part in it. And also just shelf space, you know, people are realizing that bigger doesn't necessarily, in the context of board games, of course, mean better. But, you know, only have to look at publishers like Button Shy, who've come out with these small wallet games, to realize that this is now scalable. Whereas a few years ago, there was the age-old theory that, you know, if it doesn't have a big box and can't get your attention on the shelf, it's probably not worth looking at. Fortunately, the consensus, consumer census, seems to be changing, and that can only benefit the trick-taking world.
I'd say with the renaissance that we're having, it's good to enjoy because it just means that there's going to be more options available. I know one of the biggest issues that we always have with the, you know, having to import these games is there only ends up being like 100 copies made. First come, first serve. If you didn't get it, it's probably never coming back again.
Yep.
But when we have these bigger publishers that have a much wider reach, there's, you know, thousands of copies printed and it's a much cheaper price point. It's a lot easier to get hold of. So you're not trying to fight everybody for it. So sure, it loses its cool hipster feeling of, oh, I've got this game that nobody else has.
The rare Pokemon card that nobody else could get, yeah?
Yeah, but the hobby is supposed to be enjoyed by all. So the fact that more people can play these kinds of games that I'm gushing about and everything else we can to be able to talk about them is amazing. I'm so happy for it, and I'm very excited to see what this, again, renaissance holds for us in the future. Which, a question to you then, Patrick, is where do you think you see the future of this renaissance going?
Well, that's the multi-billion dollar question, Ryan. Like you just said a moment ago, it was hipster, it was cool in a way because you've got this game that potentially not many people own and you feel a bit exclusive. But now everybody's getting these copies, you know, going forwards. Isn't it nice not to have to worry about whether you can pick a game up or not? The anxiety, on my perspective, is completely gone. But longer term and going forwards, I feel that trick taking's here to stay. It always has been, because you only have to throw back to a game like Hearts or Euchre to realize that this genre is absolutely ancient. We're just modernizing it, and we're experimenting, and we're using our creativity and building on designs of other games and obviously other card games and implementing them into the trick-taking genre, which is great. So I think it's here to stay, because it always has been, first of all. And second of all, I think that while we're enjoying a renaissance at the moment, the potential's there for it to die a death a little bit in terms of calm down. You know, the kettle's boiled and now it's cooling, if you like. But I think it will always be in the background. And I think, like with fashion, right, it's gonna ebb and flow. What about yourself?
No, I would agree. I think it's great that it's flourishing and the fact that trick-taking is here to stay. But I think the renaissance and the really big boom that we're having right now, sale reaching the number one hotness, and there's probably a good chance a couple of other trick-taking games that come out in the next few months are going to reach that too, at least top 10, if anything. Mm-hmm. But I think after about a year, it'll go back to being normal.
Right.
Sure, it'll still be talked about more. More eyes in general will be thinking and talking about trick-taking games. U.S. publishers will start to have more of them. But I think it's going to end up being similar to what I think a good example is Roll and Write games.
Classic. Yeah. Classic example.
Yeah.
There, right?
So Roll and Write, Flip and Writes, whatever you want to call them, all grouped together. But 2019 was like the year for Roll and Write style games. Cartographers mm-hmm. came out. And that was almost, I would compare it kind of like The Crew for trick-taking. It sort of jump-started the, oh, wait, there's this new mechanic that has kind of been around for a little bit, but we could really exploit this. Yes. We could find ways to make games out of it. And it was like every publisher, everybody was designing a Roll and Write. And it's like all you were seeing and talking about was Roll and Writes or Flip and Writes or whatever, some kind of something in Write. And I think that's what we're getting right now with trick-taking games. And again, this is not to say Roll and Writes aren't still being made. There definitely are. But we don't hear about it in the sense of when we did back in 2019.
Right. There was Ganshom Pretty Clever. Then there was Ganshom Pretty Clever 2. Then there was Double Clever. And then we'd had, like you said, Cartographers, Fleet the Dice Game, Twin Sisters. Two Sisters. But there's so many examples that you can give. And I think you're right. There is a bit of it's cool because it's the new thing. And human beings, as we are, we like to get new things. We like to experiment with new things and push the boundaries. But when you feel like you've done that or the industry's done that, it kind of burns itself out a little bit. So come back to your point. I think that's spot on. I think there will be a surge as there is, and eventually it will sort of peter out. But not completely, because we'll still be here, of course. Trick taking will still be here. And it will probably come back in fashion again, won't it? I mean, things always do.
I would agree with that, because I think it'll get more people introduced into trick taking games that otherwise might not have been introduced. And getting more people into the hobby, whatever way that is, I think card games can be a good category for gateway games. And I'd almost kind of take it a step further and say that board game gateway games and card game gateway games are vastly different. So getting somebody into Settlers of Catan or Carcassonne or Ticket to Ride, you know, the classic gateway games, might have a different response or feel to something else like card games. And again, specifically trick-taking in this area. Not to say that, you know, everyone's going to respond that way. Somebody might hate, you know, board games, but might really love card games and vice versa. But I just think it's great that something that has a small box is a little bit less scary to show a new person. If you invite somebody over and you pull out Carcassonne and you start pulling out 200 tiles because all these expansions you got to like sort out.
Yeah.
It's probably going to scare them, no matter what, before you even tell them the rules. But if you just pull out a deck of cards, it's a little less daunting.
I think from an intimidation perspective, you're right. Because even if people don't vocalize that something seems intimidating, they'll certainly be thinking it if they're potentially new to the genre and haven't played many games. So much easier, as we always say here, to pull out a pack of cards and say, do you know what, this is a game, it will take 20 minutes or whatever it is, and it just looks like there's not too many components in there. You go to your Carcassonne example and you look, you know, like you are swimming in meeples and tiles, and that can be a lot more intimidating, as you said. So it's great from that perspective. One thing I was going to say, I have noticed now with my group, they're bringing trick takers to me and saying, Patrick, have you heard of, you know, this? Have you heard of that? And it's like, normally I was the one that was introducing you, and now you're telling me you want to play these kind of trick-taking games. It's great. That just goes to show.
I love that.
Yeah. What kind of is happening out there? And these are people that potentially play Euro games otherwise, normally, other genres. So great. One thing we can do to prove that there is a renaissance happening is look at the guild, the BGG guild for trick-taking. If you don't know it, you should, because it's a great place to be if you have any interest in trick-taking games. So it had 673 members on November the 10th, and it now has 821 in February on the 21st. So, you know, looking at the growth of that over a short period of time, to me that says, yeah, you know, people are getting interested as a small subsection, but reflected out into a bigger audience.
Yeah, we talked about the Trick-Taking Guild back on our very first Tea Time episode, specifically just kind of deep diving in the guild in general, which is how we have that number from back in November. Yeah. But I just think it's great to see that big of a difference of only just 3 months of the amount of members that have joined the guild. A year ago, getting that many new members in would probably have taken 6 months to a year.
Right.
So the boom that it's getting is fantastic. And Chris Ray, the guy who's running the entire guild, is fantastic. We said we talked about him in the tea time.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about him a little bit more as we go into the next little section.
He's going to feel like he's won the lottery, that all this coverage on Trick Talkers.
Yeah. But no, he's doing great things, and because of this boost in additional members, he was talking about starting, I think it was more of a weekly or a monthly blog post, right. Some basically just more interaction with the people, because not to say that there wasn't enough interaction before, there certainly was, but I just know he wanted to start more hands-on things with the members, which I think is great.
Yeah, I actually said to Chris, the Opinionated Gamers blogs, there's a lot of these old discussions happening on his blogs where Chris gives his thoughts, and I think some other people from Opinionated Gamers on there as well, about some of these trick takers that have been released historically, and some of the more modern ones, again, a few years old. And I used to reread these blogs with fascination, because there's so much good content in there. I've discovered quite a lot of games through it, and I'd recommend anyone who is interested to look at the Opinionated Gamers, have a look at the older blogs, and anticipate that, you know, there will be some new ones. And I know, Ryan, that we were going to discuss some of the games that Chris mentioned on the blog, because there was a blog specifically about trick-taking games that he'd love to see reprinted.
Yeah, the games that are on that list have actually some cross in games that we have discussed that would like to be reprinted. Because actually, yeah, funny enough, in our last episode, we kind of ran out of time, but we wanted to do a segment on trick-takers that needed reprinting, because of this whole renaissance of trick-taking and a lot of companies announcing the reprints of games. As we talked about, Portland Game Collective reprinting trick-takers. The time we recorded that, we didn't have the information, But that same day, New Mill Industries announced that they were reprinting Duas and Zimbabwe Trick. So there was just a lot of news that day that was going around about Trick Takers being reprinted. So we thought this would be a great thing to talk about and go over, like you said, that list, as well as a couple that we were hoping could get that reprint.
Because, that we'd put all money on.
Yeah, because I think if there's ever a time for some of these games to get reprinted, it's now, with all of these other ones either getting reprints or rethemes.
So if there's any publishers listing, please reprint the ones me and Ryan specifically suggest. That'd be great. And it's also worth noting, you touched on Daniel Newman with New Mill Industries. Duas and Zimbabwe Trick, those two games, Taki Shinzawa games, have been really hard to find, you know, and out of print. So what a great thing that, you know, he's taken it upon himself to have a conversation with Taiki and bring them to the Western world.
Absolutely. And I know he already has a couple more that he's planning on doing for 2024. He hasn't officially gotten them signed, so they haven't been announced yet. But I do believe I know what they are, so I'm very excited for them. So by the time you hear this episode, they'll probably be announced. So hopefully you'll know what it is when you listen and it won't sound so secretive. But yeah, some great stuff coming. And then, of course, there's Tall Tales, which New Mill Industries is also doing, which is being designed by Rand. And I know Daniel posted some pictures of the review copies for the game, and the card art and the just graphic design on it looks pretty neat.
Sounds like an interesting one, Ryan. Is that a trick taker or is it a card game in general?
It is a trick taker.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah. Tall Tales. It is a trick taker.
You're not telling tall tales.
It's all, yes. Yeah. Tall Tales. T-A-L-E-S.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. You're all telling stories, and as the rounds go on, you're having more and more cards. I don't know too much about it yet. The full rules haven't come out. I know Rand has posted like his little blurb about the theme of it, which sounded super cool. But last time I read it was a month or two ago, so I'm vague on it. But it seems like the theme works really well with the name of the game and how the mechanic of the card play for trick taking is supposed to work.
That does sound really interesting, actually. The telling of stories, and I'm sure it's geared up for people, even if you're rubbish at telling stories. I'm sure you'll at least enjoy the trick taking element, but that sounds like an interesting one to keep my eye on.
Yep. Just got to be careful, though. Your limit of 12.
Well, there we go. There we go. Yeah. So as for my list of 12, don't want to take us too far off track. But Ryan, I've got 8 left for the year. So 8 games left for the year. For anyone who's listening, I had a challenge and we mentioned it in one of our episodes to only acquire 12 games in 2023. So I've been well behaved, but with all these talk of all these games coming out, it's so tempting to just pull the trigger.
And now we're going to talk about games that you want reprinted so you can buy. So
be careful what you wish
making
for.
Making it harder.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about some of those. So the first one on the list I've got is 7 Symbols and 7 Nations. And this was a blog, by the way, that was published in 2018, to give anyone context. So what do we know about 7 Symbols and 7 Nations? Because I feel like this is your area, Ryan, as the nickname you have, the Yokai Man, comes from this game.
Of course, yeah. 7 Symbols and 7 Nations was the essentially original version of Yokai Septet. The gameplay is slightly different. I'm not going to go too in specifics because we're going to try and just go over the list of multiple games here, but it does share a lot of similarities with Yokai Septet. So thankfully, this is a game that has pretty much been reprinted with Yokai Septet, and Yokai Septet itself has had a new second edition reprint with those fancy shiny sevens. We've done an entire episode on that, so if you go back and check that out.
Please do.
Yeah, but I actually own 7 Symbols and 7 Nations, as well as Yokai Septet. The one thing that kind of stinks about 7 Symbols and 7 Nations is the colorblind friendliness of the cards is terrible.
Right.
The colors are really similar. The suits don't have different symbols except for like the sevens themselves. There's dudes in the middle, like tribesmen that are holding spears that are like in the same exact stance on different suits.
Yeah.
So it just makes it really hard to unfortunately play that because I do have a friend that I play a lot with that is colorblind. So whenever, I mean, and again, Yokai Septet's no problem. We usually just end up playing with that anyways. But at this point, Seven Symbols and Seven Nations has become a collector's item for me more than anything.
Right. Or if you fancy beating your friend, you pull out Seven Symbols and Seven Nations and say, do you fancy a game? Right.
There you go.
Not one for the colorblind. And I will just mention here that it's funny because obviously Chris is writing this in 2018. And then for Yokai Septet, I believe in the latest edition, he actually wrote some alternative rules down for the capturing of the sevens. And that was Chris Ray as well. So it's funny because obviously this was a game that he clearly had a lot of time for. Next on the list, Familiar's Trouble by Fukutaru, thank you. You had to rescue me there. That hasn't happened to me before. So Familiar's Trouble, it's because it's not familiar to me. That's why, Ryan. It's a cooperative trick-taking game. I can't tell you anymore because it's not one I've actually played. I'm not going to use the familiar pun again, but have you played this one?
I have played this one. In fact, I own the Trick and Trouble version.
Okay.
Which changed the theme a little bit of like kids trying to stop an evil scientist or a madman. It's been a while since I've played it now. The short answer is it's fine.
Okay.
It came out way before the crew did. So as far as cooperative trick taking, it was really neat and it's still really enjoyable. I'd recommend giving it a play, but knowing that the crew exists, unfortunately, you know, we're reaching for the crew if we're playing a cooperative trick taking game. The Trick and Trouble or Familiar's Trouble in that sense technically has different ways you approach every game you play. But in a sense, it's sort of like you're playing one mission of the crew over and over again.
Right.
That's like butchering it in a very short way. There is more to the game than that. So I don't want to give and I want to give it its justice and say there's more to the game. But yeah, as far as the overall gameplay goes, it's good. But yeah, I mean, again, the crew just kind of outshines it.
Right. So the trouble is, the replayability becomes overly familiar. I had to think about that one for a second, so there you go. Yeah, it's not what I've played. Is it actually in print, though, now, as we look back? We should say with each game whether it's in print. I mean, is it easy to get a copy of or not, whichever version? Or is that not a question you can answer?
Off the top of my head, I think Familiar's Trouble's still hard to get a hold of, so I want to say it's not in print, but I'm not 100% on that. I haven't checked right before this.
No, you're all good. You haven't done your homework. Filipino Fruit Market, otherwise known as Tinderhan. Okay.
So and Bastos and one.
Yeah. There were two editions, weren't there? There was the Filipino Fruit Market, and I think there might have been a couple of versions of that. Could be wrong. And then there's obviously Tinderhan in Japan, which is because Filipino Fruit Market contained two games, didn't it? It was Tinderhan in Bastos.
Correct. And that's essentially what Chris put this game on the list for.
Yeah.
Is Filipino Fruit Market itself is impossible to find. Tinderhan, you can easily get. That new version that was made that's just Tinderhan was like from 2014 or 2015 or something. And it's like been easily and readily available at a lot of different sites. But Filipino Fruit Market itself that includes both games is impossible to find. And now granted, Bastos, like there's just an extra little sheet that you could, if you buy Tinderhan, you could play it just by printing out that extra little sheet. But having it all in one and I guess, you know, updating art to make it the whole Filipino Fruit Market would be pretty neat.
Yeah, just on that, bastos is actually a swear word in Filipino. So if you ever are in the Philippines, then refrain from using the word bastos. I don't think it's actually that bad, to be honest. But we will say that the art in Tinderhand looks a lot more aesthetically pleasing. So in my opinion, you know, if you're going to pick this up, pick up Tinderhand. I know it was on Amazon Japan quite often or other places. And like you said, Ryan, you can just play Bastos anyway. But Filipino fruit market, technically out of print. Next on the list, Hattrick. Have you played Hattrick?
I have not.
Okay. This one I own. I am looking forward to playing it. And apparently it plays best from 5 players upwards. They don't recommend it from reading at 4 or less. It's essentially a bit like a stick'em vibe. You know, you're collecting, except you play in there's multiple tricks and you're trying to collect certain suits for positive points and avoid other suits because you don't want to take negatives. And this is a bit of a botched explanation because it's not actually one that I've played. But anyway, I own the game and I'll obviously let you guys know my thoughts when I play it. Loads of caps on all the cards. What do you think of the art? Interesting?
I think it shows its age. But yeah. I mean, I think it's neat. I don't mind it. I'm always one who never truly cares about art. Obviously, great art goes a long way. But you could have a little stick figure. If the game's good, the game's good. That's what matters. But I understand, you know, art is a necessity for people. So as far as Hattrick goes, I don't think it's going to be an eye pleaser for a lot of people.
Yeah. Next one we've got is Pala. So P-A-L-A by Jeffrey Allers. Weirdly, this was one that I somehow stumbled across the original version, thought I'd hit the jackpot because it was definitely way out of print. And then sort of 6 months later, obviously there's a reprint. Have you played Pala, Ryan? I was just wondering what your thoughts were.
I still have not gotten this one to the table yet. I do own the new second edition, mm-hmm. but I'm very excited. Heard a lot of people talk about it. I know there are 2 different ways to play, so I plan on playing both of them when we do play, just kind of one after the other and compare and contrast kind of thing.
Yeah, there's pointillism and there's another variant like impressionism. And it's either a trick avoidance game, which is the impressionism, or a trick bidding game, which is the pointillism. So really quirky, that one. You know, you're mixing. You're an art student, basically, and I was a terrible art student, I assure you. But you are mixing colours to create different combinations of cards. So I find it really fascinating. Apparently, this one inspired Taiki Shinzawa in some of his work, so that's great to know. But also, there's a really quirky story, and Jeffrey Allers, the guy who designed this game, actually made a lot of the original versions, sort of did a lot of them by himself at home, and sort of put together, you know, the components and put them in this plastic clamshell case, which I proudly sat on my shelf. But just like you, I need to get my paintbrush out and everything else and start actually playing this game, because it's one of those ones where I must play it, and it was a nightmare to find, and now everybody's got the opportunity, so that's great. Oh, okay, another Klaus. I really should stop saying names that I can't pronounce. You know, that's a problem.
But it's always good. We definitely need to include designers. Yeah. We can't just shout out the games. We've got to shout out who made the game, too.
So
important stuff.
Klaus Palesch. Klaus Palesch?
It's as good as I would have said, so.
Because this guy, Klaus Palesch, also did Hattrick, and he also did Mitlist und Tuk, Plotters, right? So that's the same designer. And I've probably given you a terrible pronunciation of the other. But there we go. Oh, moving on. Next up, Stickmeister by Friedman Fries. Ironically, or weirdly for Friedman Fries, the version that I'm looking at hasn't got a green box. Although I believe the new Japanese reprint does.
Yes, this game was reprinted recently and it is a green box.
Yeah, in fitting form for Friedman Fries. Have you played Stickmeister?
I have not. I mean, For this game getting a reprint, I don't really hear a lot of people actually playing it or talking about it or enjoying it or even not enjoying it. It's just like there isn't much discussion about this game. So,
and I think the part of the problem for that is if you want to own the German edition or any edition of Stickmeister, you've got a lot of pasting up to do. And okay, look, you know, we've both pasted up Trick Takers, the game took us a while, right? And it's because it's whether it's worth the investment for Stickmeister. Now, I have pasted up my copy, pasted it up about a year ago, put it in a deck box because it won't fit back in the box sleeved or anything like that. Hasn't seen the light of day, but I've heard good things about Stickmeister. So, and devilishly hard to find, you know, the German version.
Yeah. But I mean, I know, thankfully, yeah, with the Japanese version and even a newer Korean version getting a reprint. So that is to say that a US or an English version of the game currently has not been reprinted. So hopefully based on, like you said, the amount of paste-ups required for this game, it'd be great to be able to see an English version for it to avoid any paste-ups. You can just spend $20 and have the game ready to play right out the box. I know, like, what makes this game so cool and, like, why there's so many paste-ups is because all of those cards create rules for the game. So there's various things that can, like, alter the trump or change how scoring works or what just, like, normal basic rules of the game are. So it seems like it's a neat concept for a game, but yeah.
Right. The rules changing sounds fantastic, or certainly quirky. Fun fact, I actually had to get a German native to translate a mistranslated German rule on one of the paste-ups. I went to that level of detail, Ryan, for one of the cards. I just had to get it as Friedman Fries intended. It would be a crying shame otherwise, wouldn't it? So,
I'm sure.
Yeah, it took me hours, so when I get it played, I'll let you know and I can tell everybody else, save them a few hours of their life, whether I think it's worth it or not. But in the meantime, Stickmeister. Stick, again, pronunciation, Stickudenicht. Stickudenicht.
I'm just glad you decided to take this part.
Yeah,
of
thanks.
The section.
Well, I can pronounce the designer. It's Thomas Nezold, so it could be Nezold. Absolutely killing it here. One you've played?
Nope. To be honest, I've never even heard of this one. So okay, well, besides this list, of course. Yes.
It's got a bee on the front cover, so perhaps a few people got stung while they were trying to get a good hand. There we go. That must be the explanation, right? Anyway, Tazuma Master, I know you've got a bit more affiliation with this game. I believe that's one you own, Ryan. And I know this one is really difficult to find and buy, and it looks pretty.
Yep, I do not own that. It's one that I've been able to come across the chance to buy a few times, but not at a price point I'm willing to purchase it at. It's like $100 is usually like a cheap price for it. But from what I've heard is it's a really, really good game, and the just production of the game itself, because it's pretty sure it's just like handmade by the designer, which is Hanada Oraguchi.
That's
and
close enough.
Yeah. I think they have just like made it themselves. So not a lot of copies available. Certainly hasn't gotten a reprint, but from the few people who have played it, I've heard great things.
And as a very quick snapshot for the listeners, standard trick-taking fare, Chris puts, and it does say that it's a drafting different goals and powers for each hand, which gives it the quirk. So sounds interesting, you know, it's about different goals and powers. Obviously, you know, trick takers where we've got the asymmetric powers and things like that. There are games that probably do it now that didn't then. So take of that with a pinch of salt. One to play in the future. Hopefully I get round to grabbing a copy. So great little list then. And there's quite a few on there that ironically have come back and I have been reprinted since the block.
Yeah, and it's neat to see, like we've been talking about this whole episode so far, that this blog post is from 2018, and it's early 2023. Most of the ones that were reprinted back in 2022 or late 2021. So it wasn't that far behind that 2018 year, which comes back to that 2019-2020 push of where trick-taking started to come back into this renaissance that we keep talking about now. It's great to see more and more of these games getting reprinted. And hopefully in a year or two from now, that entire list is a list of all games that have been reprinted.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. We'll have to write another list soon, Chris. And what about yourself? So games that you want specifically reprinted, looking forward to in the future potentially being picked up by a publisher?
Pups.
Of course, I shouldn't have even questioned it, really.
Yep.
Yeah.
No thought needed for that one. More people need to own this. We've talked about before. It's on my top 10. I've said a lot about it. But for people who may not be aware of it, it is a trick-taking game where you are bidding for a number of tricks. And the extra cool twist to it is you're dealt 7 cards, but there's this extra mutt suit that can be played on top of regular cards. So the game isn't going to be 7 tricks every round because the round ends when one person runs out of cards. So you might have an amazing hand that's going to get you 3 tricks, but if somebody's got a hand with a bunch of mutt cards, they can play their hand a lot quicker and push the round a little bit faster than you were planning on and maybe mess with, you know, your original, what you thought was going to win 3 tricks with. So just really cool concept, and it plays pretty quick and plays pretty well at all player counts. The only thing I did have a complaint about was the amount of cards that are cut out at lower player counts, which, as I've said, doesn't bother me, but I know can bother some people. So if you manage to lower the suits so that there's not as much cut out, might be a thing you could try.
Yeah, feel free to experiment if you manage to get a copy. And that was by Charlie Bink. So if you're looking for it, BGG, there you go. One I would like to see reprinted, I know you've got a lot of love for it as well, Ryan, is Mammo Rangers.
Go, go, Mammo Rangers.
Yeah, it's got a ring to it, hasn't it? Takes me back to the childhood watching Power Ranger movies and wanting to own the swords and all the bits that Power Ranger figures. But anyway, Mammo Rangers, for anyone who is familiar at all with Potato Man, well, that might sound like complete utter nonsense I'm spouting, but that actually is a game. Mammo Rangers, essentially you're bidding on how many tricks you think the table are going to take. Everyone is at the table. And you sort of pass cards between the other players, and you're essentially trying to meet a threshold of tricks every round in order to score points. And every card that's played to the table has to be a different color. There are all these different, obviously with Power Rangers, Ryan, they were all different colors, right? So that carries through with Mammo Rangers. And all these different Mammo Rangers, you can't play the same color into a trick as somebody else on the table. So that's something that it shares with Potato Man. But with Mammo Rangers, you've got the bidding element and the really cool Japanese artwork that distinguish it. So I know you've had a lot of good plays with this one.
Yeah, the theme of it shines so well in, you know, my age group, people that I play with, such as yourself, you know, we grew up with Power Rangers. So right there, that factor hooks a lot of people before any of the gameplay. But the gameplay itself is a little chaotic. The passing of cards, as Patrick said, you're passing half of your hand. It's yeah. 3 to the left, 3 to the right, but it still ultimately ends up being half your hand. And then you're getting, you know, those 6 cards from the other people. So you're getting a new half hand. And then you're supposed to bid on tricks on how many times it's going to go around. So it can be kind of crazy for that. So while my plays of it that I've personally had have gone well, because everybody that I've played with really likes Skull King and likes the chaos from that game, I think it gives a similar vibe and similar play style to that. So everybody was here for the lulls and just the nonsense that ensues from it.
Yeah, I do have some concerns with potentially for control in that game and Funny you mentioned Skull King. I've got a group that likes Skull King, but one or two of them, Mamma Rangers, didn't quite click. So I think it's just, it is what it is. It's quite lighthearted. And if you're, I don't know if you can say the word old gits, but if you're old gits like me and Ryan, I've said it about us, it's fine now, then you might be able to appreciate Mamma Rangers because it takes you kind of back to the childhood, at least with the artwork. But don't outright dismiss it, even if you don't like it. You probably won't find it, first of all. But Potato Man has a lot of similarities, and I know the English version is unavailable right at the moment, but I know, Ryan, you've mentioned to me that there's been a Brazilian print of this game, and it kind of comes in and out of print, doesn't it, in different languages?
Yeah, certainly. Potato Man, you'll have way more luck finding than you would Mamma Rangers.
Yes, and it's basically Mamma Rangers without the bidding, so there you go. Last one on the list was, I'm sure we shared this one, didn't we? This was one we both put down as our suggestion, was Scharf Schotten.
Yes, this absolutely needs to come back.
It does. It really does. it's heating up in here, isn't it, with that game? It's wonderful game with lots of different spices, but I'll be doing it an injustice, really, with just that description because... You know, you're, instead of predicting the tricks you're going to take, you basically say a color that which you think you're going to get the most tricks in or the least tricks in. And then on the back of all the cards, you can see what suits people have got. There's a cool quirk in the game where there's a spice cabinet. And I'll make it sound pretty exotic, but actually that's just kind of a thing where you can sort of acquire more cards, right? And just manipulate your hand a little bit. So... We have played this a couple of times, had a good time with it, and it's one I need to get out to the table, actually, again soon.
Yeah, the last time I played it was at the Portland Game Collective convention, and I'm trying not to play this one too often, because when I play it, it reminds me how good it is, and it reminds me that I don't have a copy.
Oh, no, I didn't realize you didn't have a copy.
No, it's one of those ones where, like, I mean, there's been potentially ample amount of opportunities I've had to get it, but I don't know. I haven't gotten it one way or another for whatever reason. And yeah, and it just needs to be reprinted. And then we won't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I understand it was quite, I think it was printed in Europe anyway, if not Germany. And obviously it's probably more easily available there. I say that there's only one listed on BGG Marketplace that I can see at the moment. So, and I know I had some trouble finding it as well. So again, this is our wish list of desires of reprinted games that we think that, you know, the general public certainly deserve to be able to access these games and play them in their proper format, if possible. Would be nice. So moving on then, we did have a listener question from one of our listeners and their name escapes me. And I'm not just saying that because I'm not no good at pronouncing things. So I'm not sure if you've got it to hand.
Thermoptic?
Thermoptic, right. Okay, so let me ask you first then. So Thermoptic says, I'm still pretty new to trick taking, so I don't know all of these must-have games. But could you maybe recommend some must-have games? I love finding hidden gems in obscure Japanese games, like, for example, Nokosu Dice, if you can recommend some.
Nokus Dice?
No. I'll be doing it all episode. The people will love this. Nokus Dice.
Well, that's certainly a good start, and I think...
What, my pronunciation or the question?
Both. Okay. Both, even. All right. I mean, there's just a couple to list off of these games that need to be reprinted that we just talked about. I think Scharf Schotten, Mamma Rangers certainly fit the bill. Whether you need it to be more readily available and still be a hidden gem, I guess that's a hard crossover to find and ask for.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd certainly say Seven Segment Tricks would be a good choice by Taiki Shinzawa. That one is actually being reprinted as Twinkle Starship. So you might have a better chance of finding Twinkle Starship than you would Seven Segment Tricks. Schadenfreude would be another one. That one is more readily available. That's gotten 3 editions as far as reprints go. Very minor changes between the first and second, but the third edition changed up the art and rounded the corners on the cards. So something's there. You're more than likely going to find the new third edition readily available than you would the second edition. And then I think another one, actually probably 2 more quickly that I would mention would be Pompiers.
Yeah.
Fantastic game.
For 3 players, right? Or just to
clarify. Yeah, 3 players. Yeah. 4 is okay. 5 I would probably avoid. Right. 3 is amazing though. But if you like the crew, but you want to play a competitive style game like that, Pompiers is a good recommendation. And then the other one I think I'd say would be Owl About. Talked about this game a bunch.
Yes.
I do gush about it often. I know it's not going to hit with everybody because it is very quirky and it is weird. And I always feel like I really like this game more than most people. I do know a handful of people that enjoy it as well. But I always say to at least check it out because it's very unique and very silly and the art's cute. So those would probably be mine. I don't know if you had any, Patrick.
I'm going to agree with you mostly. I think to add here, I would say Boast or Nothing. I mean, a lot of people can boast about having a copy. We've done an episode of it before. Crazy cloud art, great trick-taking game, and fantastic, fantastic game when you're introducing people to trick-taking as well. Couldn't be simpler, and people tend to really have a positive reception when they're playing this game, at least in my experience, and I'm sure it's the same for you, Ryan. So that's certainly one of them that's up there. Anything else? I would say, haven't played it yet, I'm going to caveat, but Dwas obviously has a lot of positivity surrounding it for a bidding game that's quite unique, very unique, Taki Shinzawa game, and now it's coming to the forefront. We've talked about that getting a reprint. I think it's a great time to acquire something like that while it's hot off the press for something that was otherwise very, very unavailable. Can't speak to Zimbabwe Trick again. I haven't played it, but I certainly from a what was renowned in the board gaming community, Dwas was, is my recommendation there on that front. Those are my 2. I think, Ryan, you've probably nailed the others quite well. I think they've got more information to go on than they can possibly find scouring Japanese websites and waiting for reprints. So that's great. They ask also, which might be beneficial to listeners, and of course we've discussed this lots and lots, but trick takers, they've said they are scared the game might be too heavy for their gaming group. And we're talking about trick takers, the game here, and obviously this episode's about the genre, so I don't want to get the 2 things confused. They've said everybody really loves the game, but essentially, whether trick takers, the game, might be too heavy for non-gamers. And they've caveated there that trick-taking games in general, the thing that they love about them is that even non-gamers can learn them in just a minute and have a great time. But specifically, like I said, with the game trick-takers, they're quite concerned that they might be that game specifically might be too heavy for non-gamers. So what do you think? Do you think it's too heavy, or do you think it's Goldilocks about right?
I mean, short answer, I would say it's on the heavier side as far as trick takers goes, the genre of games.
Yes.
As far as board games go, it's certainly a lighter fare, but I know the question specifically is in regards to getting non-gamers to enjoy trick taking games. So I think the game trick takers may be a little too heavy for non-gamers, because in the assumption this question means non-gamers also means non-trick takers, they haven't played a trick taking game before, the game trick takers will be a lot for you.
Yeah,
just knowing and understanding a simple concept of must follow and trump or may follow or sluffing or bidding or betting or whatever it might be, just the normal things that we as trick-taking people are familiar with, they're not going to be. So having to explain all of that and then on top of it, explaining all these characters and abilities and powers that then break all of those rules can be a lot. It can certainly overwhelm you after a certain while. And sure, there are the five basic characters that you can use for your first games, which can be helpful. But still, the introduction of everything all at once can be heavy. It's certainly one of the longer trick-taking games to teach, even to people who are very familiar with trick-taking games. So while I don't want to say don't do it, because it's very possible you might have very smart and quick learners that are non-gamers, but I think in a general sense, it's probably something you need to know your group with.
Yeah, I'm only going to say, Ryan, that I agree. And also, get lots of games played in, get lots of trick takers played with your group, and then consider bringing out trick takers, because I think they'll appreciate it a lot more. They'll understand some of the mechanics of the systems of how trick takers work, and you know when to play offsuit, when to trump in, and things like that. So once you've got them hooked on trick takers, which let's face it, Ryan, very easy to do, isn't it? With the, you know, the in the Renaissance we're enjoying now, maybe then bring it out, but don't bring that out as your first trick taking game to some people who don't play games. Heavy gamers,
yeah,
no problem, maybe be fine. But even then, even somebody who plays loads of games, if they understand the core mechanics of trick takers, they'll be able to play more effectively and it will just shine that much more.
Yeah, and the trick takers game itself is a game that's meant to be repeated. It needs repeat plays. Everyone's familiar with the characters and the play style for it to like really shine. So if you just throw that at people for their first game, they're probably going to bounce off it hard and won't truly get to experience the game.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully that's answered your question. And there's nothing else to say apart from we have launched a Patreon page, and we always say this, but we're very, very grateful for any support you guys would like to show us. If you wish to part with some dinero, you can head over to patreon.com/tricktalkers and depart with your hard-earned cash. But if you'd rather not, that's fine too. We really appreciate you tuning in and listening to us today. So thanks. You've been listening to Trick Talkers. If there's any questions, comments, recommendations, we can be reached on Twitter at Trick Talkers.
You nailed it.
Or
this
by
time.
Email. I got it this time. Yeah. I normally say at, and of course, everybody knows a Twitter account starts with an at, right? But just in case you didn't catch it, it's Twitter, Trick Talkers, or via email at tricktalkers@gmail.com.
One of these times we're going to nail this outro, but I feel like it's still our brand to always have awkward intros and outros.
Yeah, we
so
love the awkward outros.
I love it.
We love the awkward intros. And we hope you love it too, because it makes it extra awkward. So thanks for listening. We will, as Ryan always says, see you around.
See you around.